Good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever it is, wherever you might be. I am Chase Cunningham, Dr. Cunningham, if you want to be formal, Dr. Zero Trust, if you want to be cool. That sounds like such an old guy thing to say, but whatever. I guess this thing has become a friggin' brand now, so I'm just going to stick with it because it kind of follows me. I never sat around and said, oh, let's come up with a Dr. Zero Trust thing. Mr. Lewis from Lumio was making the joke about that, and I just kind of ran with it, and here we are. But hey, what it is. Very quickly, I've been up since 2:30 this morning, and not for a good reason. I found out last night what the worst noise you can ever hear in the middle of the night is. I thought it was someone breaking into your home or something like that. Turns out that's not it. I have two little Pomeranians that sleep in bed with me. I have a giant German Shepherd and a giant Doberman that are too big to do that, but the little guys do. I woke up at 2:30 this morning to the sound of a dog vomiting right next to me in my bed. And apparently whatever dog vomit virus was going around was communicable, because as soon as number one puked all over the bed, number two puked all over the bed. And if you've never been awoken from a deep sleep by the sound of a dog getting ready to hork all over your bed, it's pretty terrifying. And the worst part is it's dark, so you can't see where the vomit is, and you're trying to get out of bed. And then what do you do with the dog? It's basically like a little hand grenade. Do you pick him up and move him and then, you know, try and get him outside to barf? Or do you just kind of let things run their course and deal with whatever happens? I chose the latter, which was just wait till he empty and, you know, clean it up. But that was not the way to start off my morning at 2:30. Anyway, after that, how do you go back to sleep? Like you're jazzed because you were dead asleep and you woke up to the sound of and you dealt with that. And then now you got to get the kids off to school and whatever. Quickly, because I said I was going to do this, I want to start to open the aperture a little bit on something that I've been working on in the shadows for a while and just kind of let the community know about this. So I've had enough of the big vendors pushing the little vendors around, and I don't think that it's fair for all the little vendors that are trying to bring really solid solutions to market that they can't scale and get enough of their product in front of enough people fast enough and let them actually use the product. And let's be clear here, there's a real difference between, especially in security, I want to demo your product. I don't want to go to a website and you point me to a salesperson and then I got to go through a demo with them, because that's not me demoing the product. I don't want to go to the car dealership to test drive a car and you say, well, here's the car, but Rick's going to test drive it and you get to sit in and watch. I want to drive the car. So I've been working on this with some friends of mine for the last couple of years. We have got a solution where we can put vendor systems together virtually. We can share that stuff just like Calendly links for folks, and anybody anywhere can demo those products on their own. Now, what does this mean for everybody that's not a vendor? This means that if you're listening to this and there's a particular product or solution that you want to try out and you would get value from it, ping me directly, DM me, and I'll go to those companies and I'll ask them to demo their product and put it in this platform and get you the link. There's no cost to you. What this is going to do is going to make it where everybody can demo products all the time. And the question that you should ask is, if a vendor tells me no, that they won't let me put their product into this virtual system that is going to be their architecture, their instructions to use everything else, I will be the guinea pig to run through it. I'm not disclosing anything with anybody, not sharing whatever, but this is a way to democratize the ability for people to demo software and do it where you can demo the stuff. The system that I built doesn't store anything. It just demos. You can use your passwords, your logins, your SSH credits, whatever. And then at the end of that, it all goes away and goes back to disk, so it's a clean image. But we're going to do that. And the question that we should ask is, if I go to a vendor and say, what can I demo your product? Can I put it in this platform? If they say no, why? Is their product not solid enough that they can let people demo it on their own? Are they hiding something? Is it too crazy configured? Do they not care about the small vendors and everybody else? There's a reason. If your solution is really solid, you should have good enough instructions, good enough capability. It should be able to integrate into this type of system because I built this thing to do that. If you can't and you won't, there's something up there. So anyway, go to www.demo-force and sign up for that stuff and check it out. I'm going to be doing this. If you're listening to this and there's a particular product that you would like to see demoed or tested out or whatever else, DM me because I'm just going to start working through the list. And I got a list of over, I think, 4,000 vendors I'm going to work my way through. But in my opinion, having been somebody doing SE stuff and being someone that's always trying to demo products because I want to know how they work, this is a way to do that. Again, for the people on the community side of this, there is no cost to you. Vendors are going to have to pony up a little bit of cash because there's a hosting side of this thing that I got to cover. But it, trust me, I went to a $25,000 a night dinner in June with a vendor. This is not going to be a $25,000 thing. So they got the money to afford this. And by the way, I'd like to also say that LinkedIn article I put out the other day about if you're a vendor and you're dialing back on your marketing spend right now, you're fucking stupid. Let me just be real clear with that. Now is not the time for folks to be dialing back. Where'd the idea of competition go? When my competition dials back, that's when I step up and step on their throat. Market that stuff. The URL is www.demo-force. I'm the demoforce.com. So go check that out. Sign up for it. Tell me what you want to get demoed. I'll go do it. I am glad to be the guy that jumps on the sword and runs into the fray here. All right. So look that up. I'll share it at the end of this. I'll put it in the comments, whatever. Check it out. I think this is where we start to take the power back and start to make things fair for everybody. Now, on to cyber stuff, because that's what I'm supposed to do here. I'm not supposed to talk about dog vomit and some product that I built. Anyway, dog vomit shit was actually gross, but very funny. And if you didn't catch the beginning of this, yeah, go back to that. Anyway, so let's start with number one. There's an article on from Talos, which is Cisco, about Quackbot. Quackbot, QAK bot, affiliated actors distribute ransom night malware despite infrastructure takedown. Now, what's the point here? The point is August 29th, Quackbot malware disrupted an international cyber takedown. September 1st, TechCrunch, how the FBI took down the notorious Quackbot. Reuters, August 29th, the U.S. says it and partners have taken down notorious Quackbot. The point here is you're not taking them down. You're just kind of causing them problems, and ultimately they'll just move somewhere else. So we're not doing ourselves any good by telling the adversaries that we publicly say that we've taken them down, and then guess what? They come back 30 days later, 6 weeks later, and they do the same stuff. You're just emboldening them because they go talk to their homies and they laugh at the FBI and the NSA and these government organizations that publicly say we took you down. It's just the same as if you punched somebody and knocked them out and they stood back up before the eight count. You didn't knock them out. You just pissed them off, probably. So we should be careful about that. This is a good article and it talks about what's going on with Quackbot, but just for the record, we should not be publishing anything else in the future about a takedown, a shutdown of these types of organizations, because it's not happening. Until you start, I don't know, lobbing tomahawks into infrastructure where these people live, they'll be back because there's money to be made there and they're not being arrested and they're not being extradited. So just stop with it. All right. There's an article in 404media.co, which is, I'm giggling because the article title is slightly disturbing, but really it's not a funny thing to talk about. But Bing is generating images of SpongeBob as a 9/11 attacker. And the image here is pretty bad. I'm looking at it right now. Microsoft's Bing image creator lets beloved characters fly planes toward tall buildings, illustrating the struggles of generative AI with copywriting and filtering. And there's other pictures in here of the Twin Towers and people that are, I think they're anime folks flying at the towers. Oh, here's Kirby doing it. Yeah, so the point, oh, here's the guys from Breaking Bad. Oh, Mickey Mouse. Apparently somebody went pretty deep on Bing and did this stuff. I mean, the question is, where is the First Amendment running into? You can't stop it. I mean, there's no right way to deal with this, but this is part of the problem. And I'll actually go into another article that proves a little bit more of the problem with some of this stuff in the very near future. Why, at least if someone's publishing something from your product and they're putting it out and it is like the largest mass murder in U.S. history, why won't you at least reach out and shut that stuff down or block their account or something? There's a difference, I think, between big tech censorship and people that are overtly doing things for heinous purposes. And there should be something done about it. I mean, I accept the other side of any conversation, comment, whatever else, but there's things that are just in bad taste and that that shouldn't be allowed to be shared. Because guess what? This stuff gets reshares and likes and retweets and whatever else. And there's a whole generation of folks that weren't alive when 9/11 happened. They don't really even understand the impact that had. So Microsoft, you might want to do something about this. Actually, I'm kind of shocked anybody's using Bing, to be perfectly honest, but that's another story. So yeah, don't go look at that, but I'm just telling you it's out there. There is a publication by a company called WithSecure, who I had never heard of before today. The paper is called Unveiling the Arsenal, Exploring Attacker Toolsets and Tactics. And again, at the end of this, I'll put links to all this stuff, but it's really, really solid. I wish I had heard about these folks before because they're doing some great research. But you can run through it and it talks about the types of tactics that are being used. And it gives some really good data on regional stuff. It talks about the paths that are used. There's specific references to MITRE. This is the type of research and publication that should be shared, I would suggest, because it actually is valuable for organizations that need this. Guess what? It's not behind a paywall. I didn't have to go register and sign up and whatever else. It was there. I clicked download PDF and I got the paper. Hooray, hooray. Like, that's, if you got good research, just share it. You shouldn't have to do all these other things. And I mean, I guess this goes back to the point too on dialing back on your marketing spend. If you're doing those things and capturing these demographics, people, companies, and you're restricting your resources, what are you going to do with all that information? It's just going to sit in there in the island of misfit toys and no one's going to be able to act on it. So if nothing else, if you're going to dial back on your marketing spend, dial back on putting stuff behind some sort of registration wall. That's just my two cents. Share the information, get it out there, let everybody see it. There was an article that was pretty solid. This is in the Herald Sun, so I'm guessing this is overseas because it says Melbourne, however you Aussie folks say it. Hacking the hackers, the global cybersecurity stocks that fight back. Nucleus Wealth Head Investment. Investors can join the war on hackers. Yeah. So this is kind of interesting because they talk about cryptocurrencies. They talk about the main attacks that they're going on. And then they talk about the fact that cybersecurity risks are now democratized. So this is good for the business people to leverage and use. There is not a lot of super hard technical speak in this thing. Most of it is around conversations that folks would have that are not hardcore cyber people. So it's business type talk. I would say this is worth reading. Go check it out. It's good, especially when they start getting into the issues of like fake authentication and those systems as well. So worth looking at if you have the time. SC Media published this article, Laura French, growth in cybersecurity spending sank by 65% in 22-23, report finds. That's not good. Cybersecurity spending saw a 65% drop in growth during the 22-23 budget cycle, according to a report from IAN's research and Artico Search. Widespread economic stressors also led to budget cuts or spending freezes for more than a third of the 550 CISOs, up from 21% compared with last year's study. There's a reference to the study in here. I'll share that as well. But the 2023 Security Budget Benchmark Summary Report published last week revealed that cybersecurity spending in the United States and Canada increased by just 6% on average, down from 17% prior to that. Technology firms saw a 30% growth in security spending last year, saw the greatest decline. amid economic uncertainty, inflation pressures, and looming fears of a future recession, which I hate to break it to everybody, but if you look at the definition of the word recession, we are in a recession. I don't know why it's such a terrible thing for people to like admit that that's the thing. Plus, if you've gone to the grocery store or bought gas, shit's expensive. 37% of survey respondents reported flat budgets or budget decreases during 2022-23, 76% more than reported a reduction last year. Of the 63% who reported budget increases this year, 17% said the driving factor was increased risk, while 15% said it was due to a digital transformation. The heftiest budget increases came from major industry disruptions such as high-profile breaches, which resulted in a 27% spending hike on average. Okay, so the data here is not good for the overall trend. It means insecurity investment is going down. However, there's always the crisis-tunity, right? The crisis opportunity. If ever there was a time for folks to say, this is where we optimize our budget, this is where we realign, this is where we start doing things strategically, this would be where that would land. You don't need everything that's being marketed to you all the time. You need to solve the low-hanging fruit, the basic stuff. You need to align on a strategy. ZT would be the one I would suggest, but pick your own strategy, whatever. This is where there's an opportunity and there's an economic factor and a requirement to realign investment and do things better. Rick Holland, who's one of the smartest guys I know, former Forrester dude, now working over Digital Shadows, which was acquired by ReliaQuest, I believe. He calls expense and defense in depth, expense in depth, which I 1,000,000,000% agree with. This is the time where there is an opportunity to realign. Honestly, I think a lot of organizations, especially small and mid-sized, would get the most value out of not trying to do security themselves anymore. Outsource it, go to an MSSP, go to people that do this stuff all day, every day, and work with them. I liken it all the time to the fact that I run my own LLC and I don't know how to do taxes. I suck at it. So what do? I go find someone that is a tax advisor and I use software like QuickBooks to do my tax calculations for me because I don't want to go to prison. So do those things. It's the same stuff in cyber. Like there's a reason you get value from doing things a smarter way. And most organizations should not, if they really were honest with themselves, be doing cybersecurity. You cannot dip your toe into this and get it right. Plus having those SLAs, having a single throat to choke and those types of things is exceptionally valuable. So look at outsourcing, look at partnering, whatever else. There's a bunch of really great organizations out there that do this type of work, and it's worth it. If you're trying to optimize and realign budget, here's a reason to do it. And this is a good economic driver of doing that. You will make boards and CFOs and CEOs happy if you go in with a plan and a strategy and say, here's how we're going to move to the next step. We're going to optimize where we're going to use these things, what we're going to get rid of, and then align the strategy to that and move and do those things. If you're not using this crisis-tunity, you're letting it slide by you, which is not smart, would be my suggestion. So consider that. Yes. Let me make sure I find the right article here. So this was another one that I thought was, almost comical. So BBC published this. Rules of engagement issued to hacktivists after chaos. Yeah. And there's pictures of Squad 303. There's pictures of KillNet. But the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC, has for the first time published rules of engagement for civilian hackers involved in conflicts. Yeah. That, if you're like me right now, you're going, what? Like, wait a minute. How does that work? The organization warns unprecedented numbers of people are joining patriotic cyber gangs since the Ukrainian invasion. Okay, probably. The 8 rules include bans on attacks on hospitals, hacking tools that spread uncontrollably, and threats to engender terror among civilians. But some gangs tell BBC that they plan to ignore those rules because they do. The rules, here's the 8 that they suggested, do not direct cyber attacks against civilian objects. Those are the easy targets. They're low-hanging fruit. They're going to attack them. Do not use malware or other tools or techniques that spread automatically and damage military objectives and civilian objectives indiscriminately. Well, if you don't know what you're doing and you unleash some of these tools, just like we had with the Vault 7 leaks and Eternal Blue and whatever, it can get bad, real bad, real quick. So I would say that's kind of stupid to say don't, because it might happen. When planning a cyber attack against a military objective, do everything feasible to avoid or minimize the effect your operation will have on civilians. Well, okay, hopefully, but things are interconnected. There are connections from military systems to civilian that might not be known that could cause problems, and the fallout would happen anyway. Do not conduct any cyber operation against medical and humanitarian facilities. Okay, cool. It's nice that you think that people play by those rules, but in warfare, you would like to target those type of organizations. I'm not endorsing this. I'm just saying, from someone that's been around warfare before, organizations, enemies do this because it causes detriment to the operational side of the other group. And you don't play by the rules. As a matter of fact, it actually says in the Geneva Convention that if you are a machine gunner, and this is a bit of, I guess you'd call it kind of prose, but if you're a machine gunner, you're not supposed to target medical personnel on the field of battle. However, if you're a machine gunner, and if I'm a machine gunner and I'm shooting at the enemy and I see an enemy medical person come out there with a big red cross on them, and I know they're going to try and save people that I've already shot, who do you think is going to get lit up? And what are they going to, I mean, have you ever watched Saving Private Ryan? Do not conduct any cyber attack against objects indispensable to the survival of the population that can release dangerous forces. I would say that's probably meaning like don't go after nuclear, chemical, biological. But again, that's a valid target. Do not make threats of violence to spread terror among civilian populations. Terrorism, which is a common tactic used in these types of attacks, is part of the deal. So that's a dead stick too. Do not cite violations of international humanitarian law. You're engaged in conflict. It's going to happen. Comply with these rules, even if the enemy does not, and put a, you know, flowery thing around your head and sing kumbaya and whatever. Like, that's not how stuff works. Large groups in Russia have attacked Ukraine and allied countries, including disruptive but temporary attacks, knocked websites offline, hospitals, blah, blah. And then literally there's a picture in here of the leader of Killnet, Killmilk, which is an interesting name. And they interviewed him and he says, why should I listen to the Red Cross? I mean, there you have it. Like, if you ever wanted proof that they could care less, there you go. So you're trying to tell the good guys to be good, and the bad guys are going like, well, why would I even bother with this? It's comical that this was even published. I don't know why you would waste your time putting this stuff out there, but it's very kumbaya from people that, I mean, the Red Cross deals with humanitarian crisis all over the world. They should know that this should have been written on toilet paper. There is a back to what I was talking about earlier with kind of generative AI and whatever. There's an article in Bloomberg about deepfakes in Slovakia preview how AI will change the face of elections. This was published October 4th, so yesterday. Something didn't add up in the alleged conversation between progressive Slovakia's leader Michal Semeca and a local journalist that circulated in the run-up to Slovakia's elections on Saturday. The speech was stilted and their voices flat, even as leaders of the country's main pro-European party seemed to slag local voters, discuss buying votes from a Roma minority, and joke about child pornography. It sounded off on the interview because it was. Fact checkers concluded the recording was a hoax synthesized by an artificial intelligence tool trained on samples of the speaker's voices. It was one of a handful of fakes that made the rounds on social media, messengers, apps, and emails, including one where a person that sounded like Semeca plotted to jack up beer prices after the elections. That's pretty serious. Messing with beer, that'll get you in trouble. Basically, it goes on here to kind of talk about how the deepfakes are going to be, you know, leveraged by this. But here's the real takeaway is deepfakes are a commoditized threat vector. You will see more of this as we get into the election cycle coming up very soon. We've already started to see certain threat groups beginning to practice with this stuff. There was an article this week on Tom Hanks, who had never had anything to do with this particular company, and somebody deepfaked him and put him in an ad for dental insurance, I believe it was. And he had to come out and go like, that's not me, I didn't say that, whatever else. But by then it's already circulating, it's too late. If we do this with elections, how bad can it get, how fast? And you tie in social media and the spread and speed of misinformation, like, this is where things get ripe for societal strife, in my opinion. I think that this personally is the stuff that this to me concerns me much more than critical infrastructure attacks. Hopefully critical infrastructure, at least at some point, if you go off and attack a, you know, wirelessly controlled oil valve. Somebody go out there and physically open the valve and shut the, you know, the router off or something. But the ability to make people think that something is real and true and spin the narrative and do it at speed and scale that could cause loss of life and those types of things, that is concerning. And the fact that we are living in a society that is already bifurcated, we have a lot of people that are looking for a reason to get into a fight. And we have lots and lots of folks that have weapons in the U.S. It can get really ugly really fast. So if you're the adversary and you're looking for the biggest bang for your buck type of deal to do, deepfakes around elections are probably it. And you don't even have to be good. You can just be okay and get that stuff across the bow. There are entire legions of people that are looking for Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. And every time they see a video or an image, they'll jump on it. It's what happens when you start doing that with election stuff and you do it well. I mean, you got an NVIDIA graphics card and some time, you can make really good deepfakes. Go look at the deepfakes I've put out. It took me minutes to make those, and they're decent. I did those just to prove how simple it was to do that type of stuff too. So yeah. Anyway, it's 26 minutes into this. I'll throw the links to this stuff at the end. Again, look for some of that to come out. I'd love to hear what people would like to see demoed and made available, because I will reach out to the vendors and see how I can work through that. On top of that, I'm going to put the link for the G2 Amazon gift card on here. It's $10. $10 you didn't have before. It'll take you about 3 minutes to review a piece of software. And this helps the community. And if you didn't hear my podcast last time, I had the CEO of G2 on there saying they're not sharing your information. They're not taking configuration stuff. It's just you're putting your thoughts on survey information in there to help the community and know how we can get better at this. So do that. And I'm giving you $10. That'll buy you a third of a tank of gas now, I think, or like one piece of bread at the grocery store. But it's $10 you didn't have. On top of that, if you're around, I'm going to be in Raleigh, Durham on the 19th and 20th of this month doing a speech. I'll also be at the National Motor Freight Trucking Association's event down in Houston in October, third week of October. So if you're down in Houston or you're in Raleigh and you're around, please come by, say hi. If not, then don't, because what the hell was I talking about? Anyway, love to help folks. God bless. As always, stay smart. Stay safe, stay secure. My camera got blurry because I moved my hand on it, and maybe it'll come back. But anyway, I'm just as ugly as I was a minute ago. And I'll catch y'all on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.